Russ and Evelyn all commenting and talking about some great stuff. I mean, I love
they all love you. Every single one of these people love you, man.
Hey guys, what's going on? That's awesome.
But I want to ask a simple question. Maybe it's been asked before. Maybe it's been asked in your show and others. But what was it that got you into the car business?
Oh, I got conned. Like straight up, I did. I was like, I had a roommate and that was working at a car dealership. I was actually working at a Radio Shack at the time, and he was like, "You like selling stuff, right?" And I was like, "Yeah, sure, I like selling stuff." He was like, "You like cars? I love cars." He goes, "Why don't you come sell cars with me?" Okay, sounds cool. Little did I know he got a $500 bonus, which I paid for longer than 90 days. So he was going through the entire university asking everybody if they wanted to sell cars. It had nothing to do with me as an individual. So the funny thing is my tenure there actually lasted longer than his did. So it was I don't even know if he actually collected on the $500 bonus.
He was out prospecting people to take the job instead of people to buy. Man, that's funny.
But I find that we get into this business like one of three ways, right? Either we're born into it, mm-hmm. all right? We stumbled our way into it one day. Like the stories I hear are hilarious. This is like, well, I was buying a car from somebody and then they offered me a job. Oh, okay. You know, yeah. Or in my case, you get conned into it. So
it's true, you know, and I love that story. That's funny that he got conned into it. You know, that the thing is, it's things happen for a reason, and you were just meant to be in this business.
That's exactly what it was.
The business was thirsty for some Jason, you know. So
I loved cars. I loved selling. I started my selling career actually with my father. We sold baseball cards on the road in the mid-'80s and late-'80s and probably into early 90s. Probably 90, 91 is probably when we stopped. And literally, we'd go to convention to convention selling baseball cards. And he would set up his table. And my grandfather built me a little 4x4, kind of 4 foot by 4 foot kind of glass case for my cards. And I would sell like Marvel comic cards. And I would do like little action heroes and stuff like that. And, you know, it wasn't until much later on I realized that, you know, my dad brought me along because he loved hanging out with me. But it was actually a strategy he had. Because these card shows, fathers would come with their sons or their daughters, right? And I would occupy the daughter or the son with some of my stuff so that he could actually suck up the time with the father and continue to sell. So it was a multi-pronged approach sell strategy. So I learned really early on of how to sell and how to create strategies around selling and targeting your audience. I mean, I remember him setting up his cards display. He'd be one of the last people in the show to set up. So you go to these big monster shows, right? You get a table, you know, and you go to these big monster shows. It would take a long time to set up, right? But he would actually spend majority of the entire morning, instead of setting up, walking the entire place and seeing what everybody else was putting out, right? And then and only then would he go back and start putting out his own stuff. And he would just in his head know, he's like, okay, I saw these guys over there. They had, you know, those Ken Griffey Jr. rookie cards over there. They're selling them for this. Okay, I'm going to pull mine out. I'm going to put these over here in this side of the corner. Like he even had it how you laid it out in the cases from right to left, from top corner to bottom corner. Like all of that was kind of just, I learned over it. And that was at a very young age. It's how I started learning how to sell cars or how to sell. And then cars just kind of became a fascination because I pretty much wrecked every single one I drove. Before I even had a driver's license, I had two considerably sized vehicle accidents underneath my belt. So,
hey, to each his own, right? You know, everyone learns their own way, and I can tell you that's a good story because you know. One thing that's beautiful about that is that you and your pops went out and you guys did all that type of stuff together as a family. And there's something about that, whether it's sales or not, it was you grew up and you had a father that was there trying to teach you a skill. And you learned some stuff, you know, walk around and when he would look around at everyone's stuff to figure out how he was going to set his stuff up, smart. So smart.
And then giving me that little section. Can you understand? You're paying by the foot.
Yeah.
And the fact that he would allocate a couple of feet of that or 3 or 4 feet of that. To me, that doesn't necessarily, I mean, the math doesn't necessarily add up. That's another 3 or 4 feet of additional cards that you can be putting out. But instead, you give it to the kid because that kid will attract the other kid, and now I can keep the dad in front of me for, instead of 5 minutes, I can keep him now for 9 minutes.
Genius. I love that. And it was smart. And it was good for you. You know, it helped you grow confidence.
Yeah.
It helped you grow confidence in negotiating with people. It helped you grow confidence in just meeting new people that you've never seen before. But you all had a common thing. It's like when people come into a dealership, we're on the same mission. You want to buy a car, I want to sell a car. Let's make this work, right? So it's very much like that. You're doing a, that is a really cool story, man. I think that's neat. My sales, you know, experience with my father, nothing like that. He did take me out and show me negotiating. My dad was a negotiator in every, he didn't care where he was. He could be at Walmart. Yeah. He's going to negotiate at Walmart, you know? So that's just the way my pops was. And my mother, she's from another country. So she's from Korea, South Korea, and she's very much a negotiator too. Probably one of the best negotiators I've ever seen. Like she will sit there very, very big about it, right? But, and if anyone's ever dealt with an Asian or particularly a Korean woman on a lot, it's not easy. And you do have to take your time with them. And it's not
easy. Did you ever see that TV series? I'm going to find it now because you just reminded me of it. I think it was it Fresh Off the Boat?
I love that show.
Do you remember that? Okay, there's actually an episode where she goes in to negotiate a car purchase, and it is awesome. And Shaquille O'Neal is in it, and she keeps asking for the manager, and she keeps going up. I want the manager. I want the manager. I want the manager. Finally, she thinks she's in the right spot. She looks around. She goes, "No, this is not the manager." And then Shaq comes out and goes, "You're the only person to make it this far." You gotta watch it. I love that show.
I think I missed that episode because
you gotta just look it up. That. Just look Shaq sell cars or something like that.
I'll definitely check that out. Well, it's a great story that you crazy. That's a new word.
Crazy.
It's crazy.
Hashtag crazy, guys. That's what this morning's all about. It's hashtag crazy.
So I want to get to my third question with you. You know, in this business, I know that you've been influenced by a lot of people. I know that you had a friend, your roommate, get you into this business. But if there was one person, and I know it's hard to name one person, but if there was one person who influenced you the most, who probably gave you the most tips, who helped you get to that next level the fastest, who would you call that one person? Or who would that one person be, I should say?
That's a good one, man. Who would that one person be? Like in automotive, right?
In automotive, yeah.
I had this manager. His name was Bird Dog. And I don't actually know if that was his actual name or not. It's just what everybody called him. And I remember because the guy was like 6'5", 6'7", 320, 350 pounds, and he had a lazy eye. Bald, just built like Mr. Clean, just like if Mr. Clean like rode motorcycles and like hated everything and, you know, looked like he'd eat children for lunch. But it was always so funny because he'd be looking this way and I never knew which one to look at. You know, he'd be yelling at you, but I just remember the level of just kind of overall care, even though he was just this big monster of a person. And boy, could he get angry, you know, but you just, it was just, there would be these moments where he just literally just like get in your space and just like nothing else was going on. And who you were at that point in time was the most important thing in the world to him. And I just remember that. I mean, maybe because it was also his eye was looking that direction. You know, it was also the best icebreaker whenever he met customers too, because he'd be like, nope, look at this one. So it was great.
I love people like that.
I just remember that, you know, what I learned from him as far as being a manager was, you know, and being a salesperson was really the art of just, you know, really making that person in front of you the most important thing in your entire life at that given moment. And it's one thing to say, but it's an entirely different talent to actually deploy. Like it's super hard. And I even still even struggle with it sometimes today. You know, it's just to really just get in front of that customer, or get in front of that employee when the employee's having a hard time or they're complaining about something. And instead of just wiping it off, it's like, I mean, I remember he shut the door, which then scared the crap out of me, because this guy was monstrous. He would unplug his phone, all right? He'd turn off his computer, and, you know, he'd kind of, like, move whatever was on the desk, like, parting the seats. He would just, like, move everything off to the side, right? And it would just be – it would be like a five-second awkward pause because you weren't sure what eye to look at. And it would just be like – he was just there. In that moment, in that time, in that space, you were the most important thing to him. And I think that that had a huge impact on me on kind of like moving forward of like how I dealt with employees, how I created businesses, how I developed strategies. It was always just putting the individual at the heart of everything. So when I come up with operational, you know, strategies, it's like putting the customer at the core of the whole operations. You know, when I come up marketing strategies, putting that customer at the core, just like wanting to be in that space for that individual and just that they are the most important thing right now. And I'm going to create everything I do around them at that moment. So I don't think he probably knows that. And I wonder if he's even still, it's been a long time, but yeah, that was a huge, huge impact on my career was that big scary man.
I love it. Bird Dog was a good person. I could tell this, you know, as scary as he was the biggest teddy bear in the room. You know, you said, oh, what do you mean? But when he gets to his customers, man, he loved them. But I could assure you, if the customer lied to him, or if the customer didn't follow up with, like, because he's going to deliver everything he promises. So, 100%. You know, you could tell that's that type of guy. So the moment that somebody doesn't do that part of the bargain, they don't hold up to their end, I'm sure he was like, whoa, hold on a second, folks. Because, you know, as a closer, folks, I'm going to tell you, it's a nice guy thing works.
100%.
But there's times where you got to just kind of put your foot down and your hand down and be like, folks, you don't spend all this time with me. You know this is the best.
Yeah, see, he had that ability. But not, even though he was physically a threatening individual or threatening looking, right? He just had this just a candid ability to do that. I just remember the other vivid thing about him is that he grew his own jalapenos at home, right? And, you know, every day for lunch, he'd come with two of these home jalapenos about this big, and he'd eat them like carrots. And it was just like, I remember, because you walk into the lunchroom and you knew he was in there? Because you could smell the jalapenos, and he'd sit there and he would get red in the face and teary-eyed. And it was just like, why do you do this to yourself? I mean, he just kind of stood, you know, a little tear coming down and red. They're really good for you. And he, I remember how he'd eat them too, because you didn't want them to touch your lips. So you'd kind of like, like that. And it was, he was an interesting man.
So props to Bird Dog. I love this guy, when you describe him, that actually describes a few people that I've met in the car business that are just amazing. And, you know, maybe not quite to that level with the eye over here and doing all this stuff, eating jalapenos, but his personality trait, that is a huge, and that's a great leader. And that's somebody who knows how to show people how to do it and do it at a very high and effective way. Because to do this as a career, you do have to have that empathy for other customers. You do have to have understanding. But you also have to understand that you're the professional, that when you're dealing with clients, that you're the one who knows what they're doing. You're the one who can show them how to buy a vehicle. You're the one who can do all these things. I don't care if they bought 10 cars in our lifetime. I've sold thousands. So who's the professional, right? So, and that's exactly the mentality that he had. So that being said, what you got?
Kind of leaning into the professional side of it and going into question number four. But there's so much that we do as professionals in this business. And that's the biggest thing that we have to shake off of so many people's head as they come into this business is that they were anything but a professional before. It doesn't matter what you were before. Now you are a professional. Now you are dealing with professionals. And you're also dealing with people that are not professionals, and you have to deal with them as a professional, right? Yeah. And so when you're dealing, I've always looked at this as like, okay, well, I'm in a profession, so I'm like a doctor, right? So I'm like a surgeon. They have to have my attention. Mm-hmm. If I'm going to diagnose something, I have to ask the right questions. If I'm going to cut you open and fix you, you have to have my fully undivided attention. And in order for that transaction to occur, we have to have a mutual trust amongst each other. And if we're performing this surgery, it's because you understand the cost of not doing the surgery, right? You understand what can go wrong if we do not take action at fixing you. In the transportation world, right, we're solving people's transportation problems. We're hooking them up with a car. Because of the cost of them not acting earlier, they are at the situation that they're at now, whether the cars broke down, they owe too much on their trade, they didn't go about things the right way, whatever the situation is. When we give them that full, undivided professional attention that we're supposed to, we can help extract out of them exactly what their true, true needs are, which is the only way car guys, car gals, we're ever going to solve anybody's problem, is we remove the uncertainty that they have in people understanding their problem. We remove the uncertainty that they have that they have about us being able to fix their problem. And then we go forward in actually prescribing the way that we can help fix their problem. So I'm going, yeah. I know I'm going a little in detail on it, but there's so much that happens here inside of the transaction of the customer and the salesperson. But there's also this you have as a business owner, as an entrepreneur. There is a cost of not taking action into the direction that you're dreaming of, into the directions that are maybe a little bit more dangerous, right? You own dealerships. You've had some great success in the car business. Now you've taken a calculation of all of these great assets that you've built up, all of these great things that you've done, and you've said, you know what? There's more. And I can settle for what it is that I have. I can settle for where it is that I'm at. But it's costing me actually more than I'm gaining now because there's so much more that I can do. There's so many more people that can benefit from me, right? I have I have a solution here and it needs to help so many people. So what was it that inside of this calculation for you to go in the directions that you're going in now, what was it that was the most alarming thing for you to take notice of that said, you know what, I have to take action in going further than I've seen it gone before?
I think, you know what it was is watching dealerships get screwed, mm-hmm. you know, like in it just being on the other side of the desk and getting hit up by every other vendor in the entire world, you know, with sometimes really great products and then sometimes snake oil and just seeing amazing dealers get taken advantage because of vendors using big buzzwords and, you know, statements of technology that clearly the owner would have never understood in the first place, right? That's what really kind of motivated me to really kind of push the agency and get in front of customers and with a dealer, get in front of a dealer to either, you know, provide them another solution or even consult. And I just, there's too much crap out there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's not good for the dealer. It's not good for the customer. So I think that's really kind of just kind of what pushed me to continue to provide, I guess, just that bit much more of a mm-hmm. value. Look, for me as an individual, it's not enough that I meet someone's expectations. I have to exceed their expectations. Oh. Look, that's not always a healthy thing, but it's just something I deal with. It's a personal thing. it's built in me. I can't do anything about it. Right. And drives my team sometimes nuts and drives my operations manager very much so nuts because why are we not billing for this? I'm like, I don't know. but I think that's what it is. It's the intent to want to not only meet people's expectations, but to exceed their expectations. Mm-hmm. And I think what drives and motivates me in doing so is I get super pissed. Like I get legitimately pissed when I see dealers getting taken advantage of. You know, our margins are too low as it is.
Yeah.
And, you know, and ultimately who ends up getting hurt is the customer. So I think that's what just makes me even more angry.
Right. We have the smallest margins and the most, I guess, angst or most issues people have with anybody having a profit in this business.
For sure. Right?
We have such an ugly stigma that we're still cleaning out. We're getting these symptoms to stop being what's affiliated with the car guy. Now, some people are starting, this generation is starting to buy cars and never really meet a person, right? They've done incredible advertising to get you scared of the dealership experience, right? They've done that. They've made it to where you don't want to go there. If anybody's seen the Vroom commercial where they make it like it's this big giant circus of scary, because sometimes that's what it is. With old mindsets and with the old tools and with the old way that you used to feel like you had to manipulate a customer in order to gain the win, That's
maintain control, Lou. Come on.
Yeah. Get control of your customer.
Get control of the customer.
Get control of Lou. You got no control.
Make the customer hold the hood open while you do the demonstration just to show that you're in power. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Legitimately remember getting trained to do that.
Or have them go inside the trunk. Or I used to – I was just famous switch chairs. I used to – I actually did that. I kind of regret that. That was when I was young. But, like, I would sit, have somebody sit right here. They'd sit down. I'm like, no, you know what? Sit over here.
Just to show that I have control of this.
Just to show the whole showroom I have control of my customer, which was kind of silly. I don't know why I did that. I was young. I was like early 20s. And I thought it was
cool. What we were showing.
I was like, look, look at me, boss. Look at me. I got control. Hey, it's over here. But,
yeah, that's how we were trained to do. We weren't trained to work with the customer. We were trained to control the customer. Right. All right. So what we're doing, what we're dealing with as an industry is we're dealing with the last 30, 40, 50 years of being taught how to control, and now all of a sudden as an industry we're being told that we need to work with the customer.
They have control. They have so much knowledge. We were always the guys trying to hide our cards.
100%.
You know, trying to be like, oh, no, we're not going to show you this and keep them in the dark until they get through the box, and then when they get through the box, maybe they'll find out what they did. That picture of the guy in Suckers, remember in Suckers, Car Guys and Car Gals?
Oh, yeah, I remember
that. His contract, and he's crying in the shower. What have I done? Right?
What did I do?
And that was like a small sense of pride. Some car guys enjoyed being the ones that put a person in that situation.
100%.
So how hard is it to learn how to shift into, no, folks, we care about you, and now we understand that the only way that our revenue gets better in time is if we build solid relationships now over time. And that is a paradigm shift that's completely happening now. Some of it's forced. Some of it's because we absolutely have to give them the information, right? Oh, because 90% of the other dealers already gave it to them. It's right here. They can access it. And that is why there's so many people that, and we've said it before, that are WebMDing themselves, right? They think they know everything already before they get in front of a professional or they get the chance to talk to a professional. So it makes the average car guy have to step his game up a little bit and stop playing the smoke and mirror game. Stop playing three-card Monty. This is not the street where we're hustling people. This is where we're really trying to find a way to help people. And our particular commodity is a vehicle that moves at incredible speeds on roads that is a deathly ride if you're not careful with what it is that you're in. I mean, this is a...
Well, it's our job now to facilitate the experience, not to facilitate the transaction. You know, when we started in this business, and I think there's still a lot of dealerships that still participate in this model where they just want to facilitate the transaction. And it's either the customer has control of the transaction or I have control of the transaction. And it's usually the dealership that takes control of the transaction, and it doesn't create a good experience. So you have to decide as a dealership of what are you going to facilitate? What is your primary goal? The transaction or the experience? Now, look, every vertical out there, every other major industry that is focused on the experience has ultimately been more profitable than their counterparts that focused on the transaction.
Right. And they rebalance and stuff, right? Because the ending transaction should give you the right taste of the experience, right? You should say, yeah, I remember the full experience of this great product that I have. You know, if it's the little twirly thing on a pen that costs $37 at Disney, you want to enjoy that experience of that little tiny thing that you actually had. Like, I remember standing in line for this, but all the crazy stuff that was going on, right? And that one thing that sits and never gets touched, never gets used again, you know, but you remember that experience that you had when you got to go there. And that's what makes your brand last the test of time. That's what makes your legacy actually stand. That's what makes you be able to stand inside of a room. And again, nobody have to say your name, but they remember the impact and the experience they had learning or getting something from you, from your product.
The funny thing is experience, focusing on experience. And someone the other day was telling me, well, Jay, that's going to take me a long time. And you know, right now I'm just trying to save money. You know what? And I thought about that. You know how much money you actually save focusing on experience and not transaction? Think about that. Think of actually, of course, now my marketing hat kicks on, right? And when we're always focusing on transaction, we're focusing on one thing only. That's the price. So therefore, all of our marketing dollars get pushed into what? Price, right? But prices change, and I always have to. So I'm always acquiring people based on their price. Well, no one ever, look, You ever gone to a dinner party where someone says, "Hey, I just bought this brand new SUV." Oh yeah, which one did you get? Well, I got the $238 biweekly one. that's the one I got. Oh yeah, no kidding. That's nice. No one says that.
No.
Like, no one says that. Right?
That would be weird.
Like, it would be weird. I can't wait till I find someone that finally says something like that. Oh, you know, I got the $300 biweekly one. But it's not. So that's not how the customer associates. So that's not, but for some reason as us, that's how we decided to focus on the transaction has to do with the price. Instead, what it is that we actually start to focus on the experience. My cost to actually market the experience is a lot less than my cost to have to actually, my cost to market the price. Because now with price, I'm competing with everybody else.
That's 100% right.
So now it's just a race to the bottom. You want to talk about a race to the bottom? Yeah, I got to be honest with you. I saw something the other day that super pissed me off. You know what pisses me off?
Yeah,
I actually saw a vendor, a marketplace, all right, giving out awards, like an actual like trophy for having the lowest price.
What?
Yeah. And I think they masked it by saying the best price. That's what it is. Sorry, it's the best price. But we know what that means.
All right?
So they actually were awarding dealerships. Like, and this is a big
company. I would hate to have that plaque in my store. I'd be like,
if someone gave me that plaque, I would just literally throw it in the dumpster.
I'm like, I got messed up last year. I don't know what I did. How much did I get you for this plaque? How much exactly did I pay to get this plaque? For me to be the cheapest one doing this, I probably...
That means all I was focused on. That means all my marketing, all of my efforts, all of my messaging, everything was focused on one thing only, and that was the price. Mm. So I don't want to be known as that dealership. I want when someone's at that dinner party and they're saying, "Yeah, what kind of car you bought? Oh, you know what? I bought this really cool, you know, pre-owned Nissan Rogue, you know, from these guys, and they were just absolutely amazing, man. I like, and they just walk you through the experience, right? Mm-hmm. That's how people really talk at dinner parties. Is they love to talk about amazing experiences they had at a restaurant or a hotel or with another business. Like, that's what people want to have talk about. So now you're talking about your cost of marketing that experience a lot less, because you only have walking, talking billboards that are out there spreading the good word about your experience. No one's going out there telling people at dinner parties that they bought the $238 biweekly SUV.
Nope. Man, I did the best. I found the best price. I tell you what, because nobody still wants to talk about that when they get with their guests. They're like, "Yeah, but I found it right here for cheaper." Yeah, guess what? It's right here. It's
experience trumps price every single day.
Right. You are seared by the experience.
Folks. So I'm going to get to my fifth question, the fifth and final question of the day. Now, all of us, we've been through some stuff, and this is actually one of Lou's favorite questions. It's about the reward of everything that you've done in life. There's always one thing that maybe sticks out. There's a reward that you received or something that you feel like the biggest reward for everything that you've done, from your integrity to your work to your ethic to your consistency to your everything that you've done. What is the biggest reward that you've gotten from this?
The biggest reward I've gotten from this, it kind of goes into kind of my why at the beginning, right? Is that I just my biggest reward is the ability to continue to run my race.
Mm.
You know, I watch a lot of small business owners right now go out of business, you know, because of COVID and, you know, because of the loss in business. And so, you know, the biggest reward that I have is that ability to continue to run. Like, I mean, put all that hard work in, all that content, all those relationship building times, and just and the reward is just simply just to continue to be able to run. And, you know, I'm not a runner, by the way. my physique I know is a little alarming there. You probably assumed I run marathons all the time, but no, I don't.
You're right, I did. I assumed that.
but you talk to marathon runners, and this is their mentality, right? All of that hard work, all of that pain, everything that they did, everything, all the time they put into it, all of the instead of taking that pint of beer, ordering a glass of water, like all of those little things combined was so that they can put themselves into a place of pain again and continue to run another race and another race and another race. And as an entrepreneur, that is the reward. The reward is to continue to run, is to continue to run the race.
Man, and that's a great way of putting it. I agree with that. I know that's what you're doing, and I know that reward is a very good feeling, and I feel that. I totally understand what you're doing.
Right? It's so rewarding to wake up and say, you know what, I get to run again today.
You know, it's true. You know, I'm not a marathon runner at all. I don't even really run.
If you see me run, you better be running too, because I don't run. I'm running from something.
So right. So when it comes to all this stuff, everything we've talked about, it's 80% mental, folks. Yeah. 80% mental, your mentality. So whatever you're doing, you have to have that right mentality, because 20% of it is the other stuff, but 80% is just your mind. So make sure that you guys have the right mindset. Make sure that you're ready to go. Make sure that you're ready to run this marathon. Make sure that you understand that it is not a sprint. It is a marathon. Now, you could throw in your little sprints in the middle of a marathon, but it's never going to last. You got to make sure that you pace yourself. Understand that things are going to happen as long as you stay consistent and you keep moving. I love this. I love the five-liner today with you, Jason. It was an amazing five-liner. You definitely talked a lot of great nuggets in there. I love your past story, talking about your biggest influence, where how you got in this business. All that stuff's so important to be able to know the real you. I think I got to know you a little bit better today. I'm excited about that. We still do have one more section I want to do with you. It's the fresh news. I know you're short on time. You're very busy, but I want to knock this out because this fresh news is important. It's all about what you're currently doing and how people can get a hold of you, the whole nine. So
let's do it. Car Guys and Car Gals, this is Lou Ramirez, the Car Guy.
This is Fred Lenard, the Subcon Hero.
And we are here with the strategy mob boss, Jason.
That's right. Hey, man. Kiss the ring. All right, so.
Right, no, 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 no,